From late June to early August, we took a 14,000-mile cross-country road trip to get away from the world.
It brought us to 20 national parks, 33 states, 46 cities, and 43 national monuments, forests, memorials, grasslands, and recreation areas.
So in each episode, we'll outline one of our stops, talk about the history of the place, our impressions, and a piece of dark history tea associated with it.
It's gonna be dramatic, scandalous, dare I say captivatingly funny, and hopefully it inspires your next trip in the United States.
This is Road Boys with Jeremy
and Jacob. Welcome to another episode of Road Boys.
Boys on the
road. Rose on the...
Came in with it before you did. You got the last time, Jacob. You got it last time.
Okay, I think I messed up the wording. It was Road Boys, Boys on the Road.
Yes, and as I mentioned, that should be our official theme, so we'll make a whole recording of it.
I think it will be in our official promotional content, at least.
We're always just a little flat, but that's like the moniker.
That's the moniker of this show. And man, so we're in mid-October now, right?
Boy.
This is releasing on the 18th of October.
Yes. So mid-October, it's getting a little bit chilly, although I have 70s down here at least for today, so it still feels like...
Really? You have 70s?
Yeah, man, I have 70s.
Oh, wait, I have 70s too.
I ventured outside today. That's a big thing. And I walked outside. And I walked outside to get some mail. And I was just surprised. I think when I was inside earlier, I was like, it's probably very cold out there. I had my mind adjust to that fact. And in the end, I walked out and just ended up sweating because I was in like pants and whatnot. It's like, well, this didn't fit in with the fantasy.
Oh, it's you weren't feeling the fantasy.
Well, how can I feel the fantasy if reality starts crashing in?
That's really a real Valentina quote RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since we're in mid-October, I feel like we've been dodging the question because we've recorded a couple in October so far.
Yes.
And it's about Halloween.
Halloween, which is, I guess, technically still on this year because the date will come around and it will be Halloween.
This year is by far the weirdest year of Halloween that there could be. And that's saying something because in New Jersey, Jeremy, you weren't here when this happened, but they canceled Halloween one year because of Hurricane Sandy. So we've had it canceled before, but it turns out a global pandemic is not enough to cancel Halloween.
Yeah, Chris Christie isn't going to come out this year and say it's canceled. I just can't imagine him doing that.
I was expecting a blue windbreaker. How can he come out and say anything? He literally has the virus.
Yeah, well, he was at least released from the hospital, so he could, you know, from his house.
Oh, he's going to live?
Yeah, he's going to live. He's going to be just fine for the next number of years he'll live.
Well, Halloween this year is one of the things that's putting me on edge because, of course, the only thing I'm thinking of is what if one kid out of all the groups of children walking around has coronavirus and is walking around to like 40 houses and just super spreading the shit out of it?
Well, that's when you just hope for responsible parents to limit or curtail their kids' trick-or-treating activities this year. I feel like it's not really too acceptable of an activity to do this year. I don't know. Maybe that's a hot take.
Apparently that is a hot take because everyone seems to think it is an acceptable thing to do this year. So why don't we just go ahead and agree with it and say, what would the ideal Halloween costume be this year for you, Jeremy?
Oh my goodness. I have to really think about this one, Jacob. I mean,
I could tell you it first.
Well, okay, you have one in mind? You have one in mind?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. For me, it is full hazmat suit, realness. You are serving up fully protected. You're serving up fully covered. You're serving up everything that you could be serving up to protect yourself from that damn virus.
Well, I feel like that's just my look day to day. I don't know.
Walking around in a hazmat suit.
Walking around in a hazmat suit. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll do something that's like very important to me nowadays, like my own house. I'll be dressed as my house. I haven't been able to leave it for months virtually. So why not?
I think you could be a sexy nurse.
A sexy house.
Oh wait, you know what I think I want to be? Actually, I changed my mind. Sexy Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Oh, well, if there isn't a huge run on like masks for Dr. Anthony Fauci, I'm not talking about coronavirus masks. I'm talking about full face masks. I would love that. I mean, we have a Dr. Anthony Fauci bobblehead in our living room. My dad's a collector of bobbleheads, and
Really?
Yeah, I'm upset because you were at the house when we had it, and I forgot we had it, and I didn't show it to you.
Oh my goodness. And let me just say that before I was at Jeremy's house, we both got 600 coronavirus tests. Yeah. And after I was at his house, we got 600 coronavirus tests. So we are in the clear, people.
We weren't messing around with it for sure. For sure.
We are not playing with this damn virus.
Well, just back to what you were saying about trick or treating, though, with that whole house. Fiasco that might ensue. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing is to probably, and this is just a PSA for everyone who feels both, you know, the way that we do about it, would be to turn off all the lights in your house, go into your basement or go into a bedroom where there's blackout curtains, just watch Hocus Pocus, do whatever you want for the night, and leave maybe one of the most unappealing things you could leave on your doorstep. And I'm talking about like a mixture of pretzels and apples. No one's going to come to your doorstep. You don't even have to worry about you don't have to worry about doorbells or anything.
Oh, I was going to say Almond Joy or Heath bars.
Oh, that's the candy equivalent for sure.
But yes, stay in your house, lock those damn doors, black out your curtains, and live your Bette Midler fantasy by watching Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus, whatever you want.
And stay safe.
The news, that's also scary as well.
It's the scariest thing you could watch, I think.
I think it is. So maybe Hocus Pocus would be a little bit of an alleviate some of those fears for you.
All right. There's no time to dilly-dally today.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot to get into.
There is a lot to get into. There's a couple things I do want to get into before we really start with the meat of our show. And that is actually, Jacob, corrections. Can I just go into a few? Because I feel like I have to fact check myself. No one really fact checks themselves anymore. And I feel like I should do it. I should take it upon myself.
You absolutely cannot. And with that, proceed.
Oh, okay. Amazing. Well, the last through four episodes, I came across at least three glaring errors I've made in my factual portrayals of the places we visited, some of my hot takes. There's some facts I want to get into. I have three of them. So I'm correct most of the time. Correct most of the time. That's like a 97 out of 100. That's still an A. But
I can't believe you.
But here's the first one. Week two, I believe, somehow we got on the subject of the movie Superman, the first Superman movie, where I embarrassingly pronounced Christopher Reeves' name, that's possessive, as Christopher Reeves. Like, so it's just Christopher Reeve, but it's not Christopher Reeves, and I feel very ashamed at that.
I didn't even know that was a correction. I literally thought his name was Christopher Reeves.
Well, you didn't have to admit that, but, you know, we learn from our mistakes. We learn from our mistakes. And then, same thing, I was talking about Superman. I said it came out in 1970, and you said, I'm surprised you know that. How do you know such things? Turns out, I'm 8 years off, and I have no clue what I'm talking about. That movie did not come out in 1970. It came out in 1978.
Yeah, it's true that you have no clue what you're talking about, but yes, that is a glaring error.
The 8 full years we went through other president. There's a lot going on with that error. And then the third one, And this ties us back to last week when we were talking about Denver and the Colorado Springs. I claimed at least that Pikes Peak is the highest mountain in the continental United States.
Was I right?
You were right on the technicality that you are right that I was wrong. You didn't know the real mountain. I can give that to you.
All right. I'm going to take that as I was right.
Yeah, you were right, basically. I'll admit that. But this is it. So first off, Mount Whitney comes in at the highest peak in the continental U.S. Now, Mount Whitney is in California, and it comes in at 14,494 feet. So I was only off by a margin of 38 mountain peaks.
Oh,
Pikes Peak is number 39 in the country.
Okay, so only 38. That's a small number of mountains.
Yeah, but you know, it was just so deceiving because it looks so large, and that's how I make my judgments.
All right, well, there you have it. Was that all your corrections?
That's everything I can say that I know I was wrong about. So there you go. Fact-checked myself.
You know, I'd say there's a lot more you're wrong about, but anyway, we cannot dilly-dally any longer today because we have a huge show.
Huge. I'm very excited.
Huge show today, and this is still going to be in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Last week, we did Colorado Springs and Denver, and this week we'll be talking about our more outdoorsy adventures in Colorado.
Yes.
And that would be Estes Park and Rocky Mountain National Park.
Ugh, so beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So without further ado, let's get into the history first of Estes Park.
Let's do it.
Okay, so what else is new? Prior to the 1850s, the Arapaho Native American tribe lived in Estes Park for summer and called the valley it's set in the Circle.
Oh, I love that. It makes me feel trapped.
It makes you feel trapped.
I want to be trapped.
Yes. So now, beautiful. Jeremy, remember, how do you tie up a whore?
You circle. I'm not too experienced in that. I don't know about you.
Okay, let me deliver the punchline, please. You Arapaho.
Do better.
We have fun on this show. Okay, so anyway, the Arapaho Native American tribe lived in that land. They camped around Mary's Lake, which I think we drove past.
Yeah, we passed by a lot of lakes, but I believe you in that. I think there was a Mary's Lake on that ride down there.
There definitely was. And you can still see their rock fire pits there today. So, they still have some remnants of when they were there.
That's nice that they were just completely pretty much wiped out, but at least they have fire pits.
Yeah, they have fire pits. They have everything. They have realness.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual town built there by straight white men, of course, was founded in 1859 by Missouri native Joel Estes, who moved his family there in 1863.
Mm. Well, that's quite a move. I'd say it's an upgrade.
Right. I mean, and think about the time that he moved from Missouri to Colorado. It was 1863. I guess there's escaping the Civil War realness going on. Mm-hmm. But what I would really get excited about is escaping Missouri.
Oh, I completely agree with that. I think it's a massive upgrade. I think that was what we sort of, when we were in Missouri, that's what our prerogative was at a certain point.
Now, of course, I will say we love our Missouri fans, but your state is terrible.
Well, at least the drive from St. Louis to Kansas City. I mean, what's going on? You could improve the little part where it's every other part of the state, except for those two cities.
I'm just saying, if you live in Missouri and you listen to this podcast, get out and travel.
You're quite landlocked. There's a lot of places you can go.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's keep moving with the Estes Park history. So in 1867, yes. Griff Evans came to Estes Park and recognized its potential for tourism. So he started building cabins to accommodate travelers. So this is like, I think, one of the earliest places that we see tourism starting to develop. And I think that's purely because of, you know, the Rockies surrounding it.
Well, it's absolutely beautiful. I can't understate that. And I think we joked around some of the other places we've been to where it's been less beautiful, that it's beautiful. But this place truly was. So I could see even back then why people would think, you know, tourism.
Exactly. And those cabins that Griff Evans had built in 1867 became the first ranch in the area. Like, they had guides there for hunting and fishing. Like, it was basically the primitive version of a resort vacation.
So they had free Wi-Fi.
Yep, they had free Wi-Fi.
Before they started to charge you for Wi-Fi.
Before nowadays. They started to charge nowadays, yes, but they could, you know, take pictures. They would only, you'd only have to stand there for 16 hours.
Ugh, should have gone back then.
Could you imagine going there back then?
It'd be impossible.
All right, well, that brings us to 1873 when Texas Jack Omahundro, Texas Jack.
Ooh, baby.
He decided to take over the valley as his own private hunt and reserve, but it failed miserably because everyone there was like, no.
Oh, if you get someone to your town whose name begins with a place, you have to listen to them. I don't know. It's some audacity to turn them down. Texas Jack.
Well, he tried to kind of like just claim the land as his own, like, and just be like, yep, this is my private hunting reserve. And then they were kind of like, nah.
Well, would you expect anything less from a man whose name begins with Texas?
That's true. They're very big on that. Mm-hmm. But Texas Jack decided to open the first resort there called the Estes Park Hotel, which actually burned down in a fire in 1911.
Aww. So in Texas, yeah. There's just nothing good happening for Texas Jack.
No, Texas Jack kind of got the short end of the stick when he came to Estes Park.
Yeah, that's sad.
Now, living in Estes in the 1870s was the notorious James Nugent, also known as Rocky Mountain Jim.
Rocky Mountain Jim. Again, another great name with the name of a place preceding the actual name.
You've heard of Rocky Mountain High. Now get ready for Rocky Mountain Jim.
Rocky Mountain Jim. Now, what was he up to?
So, living in Estes at the time, of course, Jim and Griff Evans from earlier, he was the one who set up that first ranch, and they had this bitter rivalry as guides for tourists. They were always trying to claim, like, who would be going for one tourist, who would be going for another, like that type of realness going on.
Yeah.
And on June 19th, 1874, they had a major argument that ended with Evans blasting Rocky Mountain Jim in the head with a shotgun.
Rocky Mountain Jim got set on high. What about that, Jacob?
I hated that one.
I don't even know if it makes any sense, but we'll go with it.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. So, yeah, Evans then, of course, was put on trial. But now, remember, we're in 1874. So in 1875, he was acquitted by the court due to a lack of witnesses.
Did anyone record it with their eyes? Nope. Well, we got to set him free.
I mean, really, no one saw it and could say they saw it. So he was just let off the hook for shooting Rocky Mountain Jim in the head with a shotgun.
Yeah. Did anyone see it? Did it really happen? If no one saw it, did it really happen?
It most certainly did not happen.
Nope.
All right, so then we move to 1903. A new road opened that provided easier access to the valley, which led to 3 5-passenger Stanley steamers for touring. That's right, they're not just your certified cleaner, and they were invented by Mr. Freeland Oscar, Stanley.
Wow. So these are cars, so it doesn't really sound like they're your certified cleaners at all.
Well, you know, I think what I saw in this is I understand that, like, it's not the same Stanley steamer that you see on those really shitty produced TV ads, but I thought what we could do is help out their PR and marketing a little bit by creating our own ad for Stanley steamer.
Oh, certainly. What do you have in mind?
All right, here we go. Here we go. Stanley steamer. Go on, get you some.
Steam my carpet.
You like how I'm just reusing the same stuff from earlier?
Well, it's maybe the greatest catchphrase of all time, so it can apply to anything.
That's right, Stanley Steamer. Make sure you're listening to this podcast because we are going to be giving you free promotion here that maybe you could pay us for and monetize this whole thing.
Yeah, and I think my carpets could be steamed, so it would be really nice.
Oh my God, your carpets. What is wrong with your carpets?
Oh, well, you know, I look down at it and I just, you know, I reminisce sometimes when I see the stains that are just a little bit of stains I see on my carpet. Like the one stain I have, I can look at it dead straight ahead from when I was 7 years old. I think I vomited on the ground and I called my mother for help and I said, help me, please. And she did, but I don't think we ever got the full stain out. I think it was pizza that night.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. I have been in your room, and I have never noticed vomit stains.
Well, they're not really... you wouldn't notice that they would be any single stain. You might have thought that they were indents because they just appear a little bit darker than the rest of the carpet.
Ooh, so, Jeremy, your vomit is showing.
I guess it turned black over the years.
Oh, my God. Was that racist?
Yeah, it was different color earlier, but I guess it turned black.
Yummy.
Anyway, we haven't been able to get those out, so Stanley steamers could come in and maybe work their magic.
Absolutely, and remember, Stanley steamer, go on, get you some.
Get you some.
All right, so that anyway, after that long sidebar, that brought us to Mr. Freeland Oscar Stanley, who built steam buses and opened a bus line in 1908. Now, of course, if the name Mr. Stanley seems familiar to you, Jeremy, it's because besides founding Stanley Steamers, in 1909, he built the Stanley Hotel.
Ugh. An iconic place.
It is an iconic place. It, in fact, became a National Historic Landmark in the town and would host a Mr. Stephen King as a guest in 1973.
Oh, my God. Stephen King? You mean Dr. Sleep author Stephen King? Yeah.
I really want to say the next point before I comment on that. So let's sidebar that for one moment. And I'll just say Stephen King was so inspired by the Stanley Hotel that he changed the location of a book he was writing from an amusement park to this hotel. And that book, of course, was The Shining.
Oh, the origin story for Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep, dude. How did they end up with that name from The Shining? Because we actually watched The Shining together. Like, that was like a fun activity we did together. And I don't see anything in there that could lead me to naming something to follow up on that. Dr. Sleep.
Well, my one thought, and this is actually something I sort of guessed. I'd never watched Dr. Sleep. I never read Dr. Sleep. Is that if it's about the sun, which I heard it is about, the sun was just so, you know, off put by what he saw in his earlier life that he asked an anesthesiologist to keep him, you know, pumped up on like isopropyl or something, and just would put him into a sleep all the time because he was too scared to live his life.
Well, I had another vision of what Dr. Sleep would be. Okay, ready?
Oh, okay.
Ready? What? So you go to the doctor and they call you in. And here's the thing with Dr. Sleep, right? They call him Dr. Sleep because he can't diagnose you unless you're sleeping. So you have to go in, you describe your symptoms, and he's like, all right, can you fall asleep, please? And people are like, all right, fine. And they fall asleep. And then he's like, oh, okay. Turns out you have terminal stage 4 lung cancer.
Ooh. So please, Jacob, can you tell me how this guy applies to the to the Stephen King book?
Oh my goodness, yes. I'm so sorry. Freeland Oscar Stanley opened the Stanley Hotel, which is what inspired The Shining.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay. And
I was just thinking along your idea for Dr. Sleep, though. Just going back to that, how would he have worked into the plot, this doctor?
Oh, you know, I didn't see Dr. Sleep, so I don't know.
Neither of us have seen Dr. Sleep, so who are we to say?
Yeah, who are we to say anything? Exactly. But yes, this hotel will come up, a little preview for later. It'll come up again when we get to our dark history. Yes. And we'll go a lot more into what Stephen King did there and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have Trail Ridge Road, which was originally just an Estes Park exclusive, that was extended in the 1930s all the way through Rocky Mountain National Park and became the highest continuous highway in the United States. We drove that road, Jeremy.
I know. It was just incredible. I mean, again, being all in all seriousness, such an experience to go that high up. And I was surprised by it because I feel like we went to some of these places and didn't really know too much to expect, what to expect when we just, you know, got to them. And we drove that road and my God, it just kept going up and up and up.
It kept going up and it kept going was, I think, the most like ridiculous mm-hmm. part of all of it.
I don't think we didn't even take it all the way through. We like did, I think, at least maybe a little bit more than halfway and turned back. And there was more to see. So it was really quite so beautiful. And you have to do it, especially you have to do it when you can go on that road. Because I can imagine during the winter, it just gets snowed out or it's very treacherous. You wouldn't want to be on it when it's snowing, probably.
Absolutely. But it was well worth our time. And in fact, we're going to put up some photos from that road on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at Road Boys Podcast.
That's right. Got to put that in there.
You know, we got to be doing shameless promotion here.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
So then we jump to 1982, still on Estes Park here, when the town suffered severe damage from flooding caused by a failure of the Lawn Lake Dam.
Damn, a lot of these places have had some pretty bad strife, I'd say.
Yeah,
so far with what we visited,
it did have strife. But then the good news is the downtown area was extensively renovated after that, which takes us to today and kind of what we saw, as Estes Park is the gateway town for Rocky Mountain National Park and serves millions of tourists every year as a stop on their way to the park. And that is the history of Estes Park.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool history. And I don't know why I think you'd agree with me because I think we both had the same good time when we went to Estes Park. But Estes Park was the vibe. It was the real damn vibe when we got there.
Would you say it was the real deal?
I would agree and say it was the real deal. I can't roll my R's like that. So every time you say that, I feel like I gotta compete and I can't.
Well, there's a lot you can't compete in.
but it was so beautiful, and another one of those stops, even coming from Denver or Colorado Springs, where it really felt like you were just in a different place. You mentioned it was called the Circle before. I took that into account, and it really does feel like you are circled by the mountain range you just drove through to get there.
Absolutely.
Very beautiful.
Definitely recommend it. I mean, obviously, like, if you're going to Rocky Mountain National Park, so, like, really, that's kind of the reason to be there. You have mm-hmm. to pass through Estes Park in the first place. So, yeah, right. Definitely make a stop there. Check out the Stanley Hotel. We'll get back to more on that. But I just want to go quickly to Rocky Mountain National Park, which is not as long of a history.
Okay.
And so the history of Rocky Mountain National Park, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the Arapaho people used the Estes area for hunting and camping, which of course extended into the land now known as the park.
Right, exactly. You'd want to make use of that space.
Exactly. And settlers began arriving in the mid-19th century, displacing the Native American people who mostly left the area on their own accord. by 1860, but there are some who refused to leave and were forced out by straight white men to reservations in 1878.
The audacity. You want to stay on the land that was originally yours? What?
I know. What were they thinking?
What were they thinking?
All right, so Lulu City, Dutchtown, and Gaskill were established in the 1870s during the gold rush that we talked about in the last episode on Denver.
So is this, are these actual towns in the park, like that used to be in the park, or is this just close by?
I think they're the areas that like basically surround the park.
Okay, okay.
And, of course, that boom for the gold rush ended in 1883. They started building a railroad that reached Lyons in 1881 and to what now constitutes the park area by 1904. So the park area became accessible by 1904.
Okay, that's an important thing. You need to have people access it.
Yeah. Now, the man prominently responsible for turning the area into Rocky Mountain National Park was, and my pronunciation here, It's like Enos, or I'm just going to say Enos.
Enos.
His name is Enos Mills, who moved to Estes Park in 1884.
Oh, Enos Mills.
Oh, yes. My friend Enos.
Enos.
All right. So he explored the mountains and wrote many books describing the region. And then in 1909, he pitched the idea of Estes National Park and quickly earned support of his local fellow businessmen.
So this guy's like a little lesser known John Muir-esque type of person.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, I'm very excited for when we get to John Muir, when we get to California. We'll be talking a lot about him and his racism and homophobia.
So was Enos any better of a man?
Probably not. He was still in the late 1800s, so who knows?
Wow. Oh, okay.
But he wrote essays for popular national magazines like the Saturday Evening Post and compiled the essays into a book during a 5-year campaign for the park to become a park.
Okay. So he did a lot. He was really trying to get the word out that this place is beautiful enough to become protected land.
Exactly. He toured the country speaking to audiences about how spectacular the region was, and it was in 1915 that, unfortunately, Woodrow Wilson did the only good thing he'd do in his entire life, and that was establish Rocky Mountain National Park.
How about not joining the League of Nations? You don't count that as not as good?
Well,
come on, the League of Nations may have been his idea, but he should have, you know, it was in his right to not join it.
You know, he was in his right, but it was a very stupid thing to do. And that brings us to more about the park. I can't get into a Woodrow Wilson debate right now. He was so terrible.
Okay, well, let's just move right ahead from that. I don't want to get you riled up.
It just makes me upset. But the park is 415 square miles, encompassing vast arrays of mountains, alpine lakes, wildlife, and climates. And the Continental Divide runs directly through the center of the park, with rivers on either side flowing towards the Pacific and the Atlantic.
So, before I sound extremely uneducated and stupid, is that what the Continental Divide is? Like I'm like, what the hell is that? Is there like a crack in our continent that like separates the rivers?
I think it's a crack in the like tectonic plates under the ground. So it wouldn't be like a visible crack because we drove right over it like multiple
Could you imagine
times.
They're just... Could you just imagine if there was like just a bridge that their entire country had to be like stitched together?
That would
because
be crazy.
Of a continental divide?
Yeah.
That'd be crazy.
I think it's underground. Oh, okay. So the park is one of the most visited in the National Park Service. In 2019, seeing 4.7 million visitors and is known for spectacular rocky views.
Ah, well, that makes sense. It's that people would flock to there. It was spectacular. It was absolutely spectacular.
It really was. And so when we went to Rocky Mountains, we got there because we had literally done all of what we talked about in our last episode in one day, doing Denver and Colorado Springs. And then we drove back up to Denver from Colorado Springs, had dinner in Denver, and then we drove to Estes Park in the evening. And then from Estes Park, we drove into Rocky Mountain National Park, where we camped at the, what was it? Was it the Glacier Bay campsite?
Glacier Gorge, actually.
Glacier Gorge. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful.
We camped there.
We did, and it was maybe one of... It was so fun. I had fun every day of the trip, so I'm going to say. But I think that day sticks out in my mind as, like, really just a spectacular day. Because, again, everything that we did in the last episode, we did that day. And we also eventually got to that campground in Estes Park and also into the Rocky Mountain National Park in one day. And by the time we got to the campground, it was night. Remember how pitch black it began?
In fact, I turned on my headlights and we set up the tent with the headlights as our source of light there.
Now, when I, you know, was making some of these reservations, I saw the location of this campground in the park and thought that maybe it'd be kind of pretty. It'd be a kind of pretty area to be in. Like, who knows what you can see. But even at night, do you remember how at night we were able to see that, like, the mountains were just completely in view of where we were, setting up tenting?
It was like, yeah, the slight, like, darkness of the landscape against the darkness of the night. You could definitely tell. And then, of course, we awoke to quite a view.
Oh, my God.
In fact, we have a picture of us in front of our tent and in that campsite, and we'll post that again when we do our photo dump for the episode on all of our social media.
Mm-hmm.
And that day, we hiked to Emerald Lake in Rocky Mountain National Park.
It's a must-do in my mind.
Must-do. It was fantastic.
Yes. And another hike where, I don't know, we were going into it and we didn't know how long it would be, but really it's worth it. I mean, I think all hikes are worth it in the end, but that hike to get to Emerald Lake, you enter and it's just, again, it's like a wallpaper. It's like having it for your phone background. It's that worthy of it.
It was so amazing. I can't even describe, like, the views. First of all, I had never seen anything like that. And the views as we were hiking just got crazy. We actually did something. We went a little off the path. And we, do you remember, we walked through a, like, babbling brook. A babbling brook.
Ooh. A babbling brook. Well, yes. I think it was like a mini waterfall. I felt it was more intense than a babbling brook.
Yeah, we definitely, like, we were trying to hop from rock to rock through it, but we got a little wet. But totally worth it.
Totally worth it. Probably would have been yelled at by a park ranger, but doesn't matter. We did it.
Yeah, what can you do? We did it, and we're not there anymore. So sue me, bitch. Sue me. Yeah, and I definitely recommend Emerald Lake as a hiking destination. Once you get there, the view is spectacular. It's real high up, actually. I noticed we were getting a little more fatigued than normal because of the altitude.
Right.
But once you're up there, you can sit on rocks, have something to eat, look at the beautiful mountains around you. And the water itself, obviously, Emerald Lake, they call it that for a reason. We'll post a picture, of course.
The water is red.
But I'd say we definitely made the most out of our time in Rocky Mountain National Park. I'm just plowing ahead.
Well, there is another thing we could have done that day that we didn't end up doing, and I'm glad we did do the Emerald Lake trail, but there is another one that I knew was very popular called Bear Lake, which I'm sure was almost just as spectacular. We didn't do that one, but I heard many good things about it too. So that's another possibility for your time at Rocky Mountain National Park.
Okay, but I'm definitely going to put our seal of approval on Emerald Lake as our destination, right?
Oh, certainly. Road Boys approved.
Road Boys approved. We should get stickers and people should put them in all of the parks and make it more littered.
Yeah, we should put them on the trees, put them on the mountains.
I'm thinking we get a 50-foot billboard on top of the mountain behind Emerald Lake promoting the podcast.
I think we should get disposable water bottles, plastic, non-recyclable, and we should encourage people to litter them in the parks.
I actually want them in foam, which is, I think, one of like, or what's that? Or styrofoam. I want them in styrofoam, the things that can't, like, that never decompose.
Yes. And we'll bottle it with tap water from our respective locations, and then we'll just have it littered in the park. That's what people can do.
Yeah, you can find that all in our store. So Rocky Mountains, definitely worth our time. A great stop on the trip.
Great stop on the trip. And of course, you have to do that that road. Do the road as well.
Oh my God, the road. I forgot about the road. We did the road.
Yeah, do the road.
Trail Ridge Road, by the way.
It's literally the only road, basically. So it's hard to miss. And just keep driving on it. And you don't think it can get any higher, it will get higher.
Just when you thought it was out, it pulls you back in.
It pulled me back in. Well, also, I have a picture from that, from like the mountaintop that we went up to there. And it legitimately looks like the Coors Light logo.
Yeah,
I think that's where they got it from. That could have been where they got it from.
Ooh, so. We're going to have to fact check that one. We'll get to that in our next episode.
They actually got it from the Alps. Well, that sucks.
All right. So yes, do the road, do Emerald Lake, do all that realness, and have a great time visiting Rocky Mountain National Park.
You won't regret it.
And that brings us to our dark history of the week.
I have no clue what this could be about, Jacob.
Dark history. Yeah, I know, right? It's definitely pretty obvious this week. It seems almost too obvious, but I'll tease it anyway. We're going to be talking about a place known for its haunted past, its chilling design, and iconic status as the inspiration for one of the scariest books and movies ever created. Of course, we're talking about the Stanley Motel, the inspiration for The Shining.
Little known indie movie, The Shining.
Yeah, have you ever heard of it?
Hell no.
Well, this is probably a good time to reiterate the history of the hotel and its founder, Freeland Oscar Stanley. You know, Stanley opened that hotel in 1909 after moving to Estes Park because of his pulmonary tuberculosis.
Ooh,
yeah, apparently mountain air is like good for pulmonary tuberculosis.
That's what I've heard. I just feel like that's such a old idea. Let's go someplace so you can breathe better air. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's the only reason he ended up there. And thank God he did, because he decided to build the iconic Stanley Hotel. He spared no expense in building it, equipped it with running water, electricity, and telephones, which is very impressive for a place built in 1909.
Oh, I imagine so. I mean, like, you, again, as I mentioned, it feels like you're trapped almost in the circle of mountains that is that place. So how to getting everything in there must have been a trick.
Yeah, I don't know. He really made it happen.
Yes, he did.
And so the hotel was meant for the rich and famous clientele. And indeed, it would host people like Theodore Roosevelt, the Emperor of Japan, Bob Dylan, Jim Carrey, and of course, Stephen King.
I feel like there was a timeline there where it jumped a bit in years.
Yeah, I think somewhere Bob Dylan's in the middle, right? So we have like the Emperor of Japan and Teddy Roosevelt, and then Bob Dylan somewhere in the middle, and then Jim Carrey and Stephen King.
Stephen King, Lizzo in 2020.
Lizzo, yes, of course.
Yes.
So the hotel has been featured on Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures, and was the set of Stephen King's The Shining television miniseries. So we're already off to a good start on paranormal scale here.
Well, I never even heard about that miniseries, but yes. Of course, the famous, iconic Ghost Adventures episodes took place there. So,
which you can look up. We'll find out the exact episode numbers and post that for you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So when the hotel opened in 1909, it only took about 2 years for something dramatic to happen. In 1911, chambermaid Liz Wilson was tending to room 217 when a gas leak led to a violent explosion that blasted her through the roof of the room into the main dining hall located directly above it.
You got a lot of things going on here. Well, first off, RIP, that's like death. And you got blown up so hard that you went into the floor above. That's pretty bad.
Well, I'll tell you, miraculously, she survived the explosion. She was in the room where this huge explosion happened that I think destroyed the entire floor. And she survived the explosion with two broken ankles.
No. Okay, I don't believe this.
She survived, and she actually returned to her job at the hotel where she worked until her death in 1973.
It's like employee of the goddamn century.
She was like 95 when this bitch died, and this bitch, crazy.
Oh my, she literally got blown up, Jacob. She got blown upwards into the room above, into the floor above her. And she lived, and she's like, I'll be back at it next week.
She's absolutely insane. Soon after she died, the hotel began receiving reports from guests of a spectral chambermaid hovering and walking through closed doors in the rebuilt guest quarters.
Well, I wonder who that would be.
I have no clue who that would end up being, right?
She had fully earned the right to just be able to haunt that place forever, however long she wanted to stay there.
Yeah, right? And apparently clothes in that room 217 are often folded or put away when no one has tended to it. Then here's the creepiest part of Mrs. Wilson. Despite her years working at the hotel and documentations of the explosion and hospital records, not one photo can be found of her in existence.
Oh my God. And she died in 1973, Jacob. Is that what you said?
That is what I said. Not one photo.
That is unsettling. There's something about that. Imagine living a life when you're just not photographed. It's so odd.
Yeah, I know. And she was there in room 217 when that explosion happened, and then died in 1973. So now we go to 1974, only 1 year after her death, when writer Stephen King stopped in for the night one day before the hotel was supposed to close for winter, and he was the only guest in the hotel that evening.
Ooh, that would be scary. But Dr. Sleep Icon coming to visit that place.
Dr. Sleep Icon, Stephen King. And, you know, Jeremy, what room do you think King checked into that night?
The bad one. I can't really remember what number it was, but the bad one where the actual scary scene in The Shining takes place.
He checked into room 217.
That's it. 217.
217. Oh, again, the room where the explosion that didn't kill Mrs. Wilson happened and where people reported seeing her ghost.
Okay, so that's where the actual room was on her end. I was thinking of more along the lines of the movie where that really scary scene happens with the woman in the bathtub. Remember that one?
Yeah, it's interesting. They actually filmed The Shining in at a hotel in like Portland or somewhere in there in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And they made up a room. They were going to use 217, but the hotel worried it would like be really bad for guests to be there because at the time, like, they didn't know they were going to be making this iconic film. And so they called it room 234 in the movie, even though it was supposed to be room 217.
That's some good foresight on their end. Make no room 234.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, back to the Stanley Hotel. Stephen King spent the evening walking around the hotel floors, which I can't imagine was anything short of incredibly creepy, and definitely where he found the inspiration for The Shining.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
He was the only person there that night.
That must be so creepy. I mean, at least if we encountered creepy things, I was with you. But just imagine being by yourself in a place like that.
He was with his wife.
Oh, well, maybe he was just walking by himself. Still creepy nonetheless.
Yeah. So when he went back to his room, King reportedly saw the ghost of a small child in room 217 who had been seen by many of the staff in various areas of the hotel.
Oof. That's maybe the scariest type of ghost, fam. A dead child.
I think that's my favorite type of ghost. Full body, apparition, realness, child. Mm. So when he went to bed, King woke up sweating heavily in the middle of the night after having a nightmare in which he saw his young son being chased down the hotel's long, empty corridors.
Ooh.
Yeah, where do you think the scene in the movie came from?
I have no clue.
Well, he proceeded to the balcony to smoke a cigarette, and by the time he came back inside the room, he had basically planned out the entire plot of The Shining.
Now that's some talent right there. You can, the sign of a good author could just map out a book like that, like Paul McCartney dreaming of, what was that song he dreamed of? I think Yesterday. He woke up, it's like, it's just in my head.
it was just in my head.
It was just in my head.
You do a better one. Do it again.
Oh, it was just in my head.
Hey, see, that's pretty good.
It was just in my head, Jacob. What can I say? Find it. I'm an international talent. I think I lost it, Jacob.
You lost it.
But for a second, you could just cut out everything else and make people believe that I was really good at it.
I'm going to leave in every painstaking second of that.
Well, shit.
But anyway, back to Stanley Hotel realness. Stephen King is not the only report of paranormal activity. In fact, he is one of the many reports of paranormal activity in the hotel.
Ooh, get into it.
Freeland Stanley himself has been seen many times wandering the hotel. By the way, we're talking full body apparitions here. This ain't no like half thing. This ain't no like sense. These are full body apparitions.
Of course. How could it be anything less?
Stanley is most often seen in the lobby and the billiard room, which was his favorite room while still alive.
Okay. I mean, you have the right to walk your property as a ghost.
Yeah.
I see nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. On one occasion, he was said to have appeared during a tour group's visit to the billiard room, materializing behind a guest.
Ooh.
And bartenders at the hotel have also reported seeing him stroll through the bar, disappearing when they try and cut him off at the kitchen.
Yeah, he can go wherever he damn pleases. There's no stopping this ghost.
Yeah, it's his hotel. Why not?
Yeah.
His wife, Flora, also haunts the hotel, and she was known in her lifetime for being a great pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And employees and guests have reported hearing music coming from the ballroom, and when peeking in, no one is at the piano.
Oh.
Multiple accounts say the piano keys were moving of their own accord when looking into the room.
Well, there's technology for that, so we could debunk that right there.
Well, all right. But of the people brave enough to walk into the room when they hear that, every account of this happening says the music stops the moment they cross the threshold.
Okay, well, Flora may be a shy performer, so people just got to stop interrupting her while she practices.
Yeah, Flora's just trying to have her fantasy of being... Who's a famous pianist? I don't know any.
Tchaikovsky?
Oh, maybe he was a
composer.
One.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So she's trying to live her Tchaikovsky fantasy, and people are just walking, being like, "What? What's going on?" And she's like, "Bitch, did I stutter?"
Yeah. She probably, you can't see it, but she looks at you with like probably the meanest eyes. It stops and like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Right.
The
now?
Meanest non-existent eyes.
Exactly.
And then room 407 is another reportedly haunted room where multiple people have claimed to see Lord Dunraven, who owned the land before Stanley purchased it.
Hmm. Lord Dunraven, is it of English descent?
Well, he's a lord, so I'd guess so.
I feel like that was a whole thing that the U.S. was founded off of, no lords and no nobility.
Well, but Lord Dunraven likes to stand in the corner of the room near the bathroom door, and one account of a guest reported a light in the corner kept turning on and off. While the light was off, they told the ghost that they knew he was there and asked him to turn the light back on, and the light turned back on.
Maybe that is the inspiration from that one episode of SpongeBob where at the end they're like, Nosferatu! Nosferatu!
You just awakened a deep memory.
Well, I watched that episode yesterday. Just kidding. Or am I?
Oh, man. Well, still with 407, room 407, a ghostly face has also been reported multiple times to be looking out of the window there. So that's another corroborated account. Okay. But the room that really has the most reported hauntings is room 418.
Ooh, what happened in 418?
Well, a lot of things. The cleaning crew have reported hearing many strange noises from the room, as well as seeing impressions on the bed when the room was empty. Guests in room 418 often report that they hear children playing in the hallway at night.
Nothing odd about that.
Well, one couple reportedly checked out early in the morning in 1983, complaining of children in the hallway keeping them up all night. However, there were no children booked in the hotel that evening. I just got the chills.
Oh, man. Well, they could have climbed through the window. Who's to say that some children didn't just trespass? And
it's room 418. What window are they climbing in?
418's window.
Well, it's the fourth floor, Jeremy.
Well, they're children. They're nimble.
All right. Well, people speculate that the reported sightings of children and hearing them play could be the same spirit Stephen King reportedly saw, and it certainly played a role in The Shining. You remember the role of the standing twins that I still am getting chills thinking about right now.
Come play with us, Jacob.
I don't want to play with you, thanks.
I'd be like, of course.
I'd be like, yeah, okay, all right.
You don't need to be creeped out by it. They're just children asking you if, like, you know, you could play with them.
Well, you know what makes that scary in the movie is then, like, they have that quick flash, the scene of them just, like, bloodied and dead, and then, like, back to them standing there like that.
Well, or yeah, like I can't really account for that. I can't really account for that now.
The Red Rum kid is, like, cycling around the corner, and then he just turns the corner, and they're standing at the end of the hallway. Like, girl, I was gagged.
Yes, I think that was actually pretty scary. I won't lie.
Yeah. But popular ghost chase experts like Ghost Hunters and the Ghost Adventures Boys have decidedly deemed the Stanley Hotel as one of the most active paranormal locations in the world.
Yep, that sounds about right. And you should call them as they deserve to be called, Jacob. They're scientists.
That's right.
The doctors on Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures have deemed it the most, a paranormally active place in the world. I believe it.
All right. You're absolutely correct. I agree with you. Now, the Stanley Hotel has really leaned into all of the haunted activity. They set up ghost history tours and have a channel on all its TVs that just play The Shining on repeat.
Oh, wow. That's sick. I like that. They really are leaning into it, as you mentioned.
Yes. And this has been a very creepy, dark history. The Stanley Hotel, definitely a very haunted place. We did see it from the outside. We saw the hotel, but we did not go inside.
No, we did not go inside. Actually, if I remember correctly, and I'll just be honest with our listeners, we didn't really even know it would be there when we saw it. Remember, we were like, is that the Stanley Hotel? And we were like, yes.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We were talking to Spencer way back in Kansas City about it, and that he mentioned it was there. And then we got there and saw it, and we were like, oh, that's it.
That's it. I completely forgot that we'd be riding up to it. So it really was quite a shock for me when it came up on us like that.
Yeah, everything was overwhelming already.
It was.
But that is the creepy story of the Stanley Hotel. And I just want to add an unrelated comment on the hotel to keep it light towards the end of this really creepy one.
Sure.
Dumb and Dumber was filmed and housed at the hotel, which seems wildly different than the rest of this story, but interesting nonetheless.
Oh.
That's right. Well, Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels created magic at the Stanley Hotel.
Another horrifying movie, Jacob, so I don't know why you'd bring that up.
Really horrifying. You know, I saw Jeff Daniels once in To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway.
And it was just like his role in Dumb and Dumber?
Exact same role. Exact. That's what I was going to say. I mean, just striking how he played the same character in both things. I thought it was a really weird choice for Atticus Finch.
Atticus Finch. No, yeah, it seems like the natural selection that you want to go with.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's the end of that. So I think it's time for our fan question of the week. Jeremy, I believe you have this one.
Yeah, well, this one comes from me.
Oh, it comes from you.
Well, I could say I'm a very big fan of the show. Okay. I'm calling in, Jacob.
All right. Give me what you got.
All the fan questions this week weren't good enough, and the one that I had myself won. So here we go. What, Jacob, what in the living hell is milk? We talk about this a lot. What the hell is milk, man?
You know, it actually makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
There is no explanation for what the fuck milk is, where the fuck it came from, and what the fuck it's doing now.
I mean, I feel like there is a scientific explanation for it, but then that begs the question, like, why?
Wait, Jeremy, is this really dumb? Is milk an element?
No, but it sure as hell seems like it is. It'd be a better explanation than I could probably find on the internet.
I mean, it's not water, right? Like, it's milk.
It's part water, but also it's not water, but it's also naturally occurring like water. So, like, what the hell is it?
I can't believe that people just, like, sit down and say, you know what would be nice? A nice full glass of milk.
I mean, I'd like to think that we moved on from having glasses of milk for dinner, you know, at the dinner table. We got pizza. Let's drink some milk. Like, no. But I am certain that there are places in this country, Jacob, this backwards ass country, that do that still. Pizza and milk for dinner, milk and steak for dinner. Like, what is going on there?
Girl, I'm just telling you, my stomach would be absolutely blown up realness going on if I were to drink full glasses of milk.
for dinner, bruh. For dinner, not just like to go to sleep.
Did you know, like, our bodies are not supposed to process dairy? That's like a malfunction.
Well, I know that, like, it's essential, like for breast milk when you're a baby, like for your development. I heard that's a thing. So I get that.
I cannot believe you just brought breast milk into this podcast.
Well, man, we had to be nurtured. And maybe that ends that discussion there, but we had to be nurtured.
Well, I quit. This has been a fun run. We did 5 episodes, and I'm going to be negotiating with my agent. I'll be talking to my manager, and we'll see what we can do about ending this.
Right. Well, I'll take everything in that deal. Mm-hmm. But you can feel free to leave.
That was horrifying. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we have no clue what milk is.
We still don't, so someone can add us with a sufficient explanation. I'm not talking about scientific. I'm asking more about a why, you know, and scientific. Scientific and a why would be the most perfect answer we could surmise and could get from this.
Yeah, like any administration member of the current presidential administration and give us a full-on lie about what's happening.
People literally live their lives making money off of milk, and I just want to know how, too. That's another question.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense, fam. Well, Well, maybe that'll be the season finale. We can come up with a sufficient answer. We'll challenge ourselves.
We have so many episodes to think about it.
Yeah, that's why I said season finale. We have to give ourselves a lot of time.
Well, there you go. Is there anything else you want to discuss today, or are we good?
I think we're good, but I think to reiterate, this isn't about the milk. Don't worry, we're beyond that.
Thank God.
But this is about milk. No, I'm just kidding. We had a fantastic time at the stop we talked about today. I think it was a great stop, a highlight, if I do say so myself.
I absolutely agree with you. It was certainly a trip highlight. It was absolutely incredible. The sights you see there, the way everything looks, it's exactly what you think the Rockies look like, is like what it really is, but it's just so much more spectacular to go there in person.
Right. It's a case of like having high expectations and then definitely having them met, if not exceeded.
And I also feel like that was our first truly spectacular landscape of the trip.
Right. I would say that seeing them from a distance in Denver and going to Garden of the Gods certainly was like it whet our appetite. But for that ride later in the evening and us staying in the park and seeing the park and seeing Estes Park, it really was something, you know, spectacular. I won't forget it.
I'd say my appetite was whetted.
Mm-hmm. It was goddamn splashing. We got a lot of mountains. And
we got so many mountains.
It satisfied me.
It left me satisfied and smiling. And that is episode 5. You can believe it? We made it through 5.
I cannot believe it. This is the hardest I've ever worked on anything ever in my life. So,
so make sure you keep the comments, ratings, reviews, all of that coming. Follow our social media at Road Boys Podcast on all platforms, and tell a friend to listen.
Yeah, we trying to blow up and act like we don't know nobody.
as we always say, we're going off.
We are currently going off.
Next week it'll be Jeremy's turn to do all the research. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I can't say I'll have like a shining, like that something that famous, but I'll just say where we went, there could have been some really creepy stuff going down. I just feel it in my bones.
So make sure you tune into that, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Road Boys, starring Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro as themselves. Produced by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. Directed by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. And created by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. Special thanks to Vlad Glashenko for recording the intro and outro music royalty-free. And Tina Perkins, that's me, for recording promotional content. To learn more, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Road Boys Podcast.